Till Death Do Us Part is a lighthearted and sometimes satirical true crime podcast where we present our dysfunctional married take on serious cases involving other dysfunctional relationships. We hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to the 104th episode of Till Death Do Us Part.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Melissa. Don't mind the yawning. It's just really early in the morning.
Yeah.
Do we have the sexy I just woke up kind of voice?
No.
No. Sound like I've been a smoker for 50 years.
Do people consider your voice when you first wake up in the morning a sexy voice?
No. It's just phlegmy. You need to brush your teeth.
Huh. Well, we're definitely putting people in the mood then.
Aren't we? I hope this is your first show.
Do people just get up and start listening to stuff?
No, like if this is their first time listening to our dysfunctional podcast.
Oh.
And they're like, why are they talking about their morning voices? You know why? Because we want you to know how kind of important this is.
We're trying to squeeze everything into cracks of time. And
that we're willing to give up our Sunday morning snooze to come and record.
And we are squeezing you into our crack. So, welcome to our crack of time, I guess.
But don't do crack.
No, because crack is whack.
Daniel, you got any factoids for me?
No. So instead, we're going to talk about phrases that are innocent but sound dirty-ish.
Ooh, okay. Like, welcome to our crack.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you seen my crack lately? You know, those kinds of things.
There's a crack in my sidewalk.
I don't know if I'm going to agree with all these because I don't agree with lots of things. And you probably agree with less. So between the two of us, we'll make this horrible.
Oh, yay.
He's definitely thirsty tonight. Now, there is a gif of a dog drinking water. So I guess that's what they're getting at. I've never heard of saying, oh, he's thirsty tonight, or was that sound sexual at all?
I don't think so.
No, so I don't know what it is. That tea bag was actually better the second time around. Yes, yeah, then there's the gif of dunking the tea bag in the tea.
Tea bagging. Oh, that's when you're dating.
The landscapers are coming over today to trim your bush. Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
It's bad if you have to employ people.
To trim your bush.
To trim your bush. One for me. Yes, my favorite animal is definitely the beaver. See, it's like a zoo. A zoo visit.
This isn't a family show.
Yes, it is. Okay. Lots of people like beaver. Want a bone?
I have heard that multiple times in our relationship.
I've heard it yesterday because I looked at the dumb dog and I said to you, where's your bone? You want a bone?
She said, no, thanks,
Dad. And then
she
just rolled over and fell asleep.
Like most of the women in your life.
Exactly. Gosh. Ouch. You know, a pearl necklace would really look nice on you.
I don't like pearl necklaces.
I know. You've told me that. So.
Don't buy me one.
It's out. Save me the money and the hassle.
The hassle?
I was just really surprised how big his package was. Mm-hmm. You know, you've never said that.
I've never said
that. So, I don't know. Never. No. I think that's a UPS joke. I don't know. I love sausage. There's a gif of a guy eating a sausage with a little, like, wiener dog eating the other end of it.
Oh, gross.
That's odd. I wonder what happens to nuts in space.
I heard they shrink.
Really?
Yes. That should be another factoid.
Do not shrink in space. Well, if we're talking anatomically, do people get taller or shorter after being out in space for any length of time?
I don't know. I just know my grandma was too short to become an astronaut.
Yeah, so if you do shrink, and she's already short, poor thing, she wouldn't stand a chance coming back.
No.
We were only riding for maybe 5 seconds before we were desperate to get off. That's any, like, twisty ride, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or college.
We were banging all night.
What's the gift?
Okay, two things. That's never happened. And it's a guy playing drums, like a band.
Unless you're into, like, the tantric lovemaking, like Sting and his wife. They're so full of crap.
Sting?
Yeah, that singer Sting. I'll be watching you.
How old
he
are
and
they?
His wife are all into the tantric sexy time.
How old are they? Like 60?
I don't know, probably older.
They say they
oh, God. Do it for hours and hours.
Well.
Gross.
Well, then this probably is a good follow-up. In an instant, she was dripping wet.
Oh.
This is a gif of a big old sweet puppy dog lab trying to bite a water spring into the pool, and it fell in.
Oh, well, it's a lab. It can swim.
Yeah, and it's dumb. So there's that.
Because we have one.
Ever since she showed him what to do, he just loves tossing salad. You know, that's more of like a domestic food kind of thing.
Oh, God.
You know, because a lot of guys don't know. You don't know what to do when it comes to salad.
I hope nobody from my new work is listening.
You ever showed me how to make salad?
Have I ever showed you how to make salad?
Yeah, like, hey, here's really how you got to do it. And then you got to toss it. No?
No. I think it's a natural instinct. It just came to you naturally.
Okay. No, I can see that. I was expecting maybe 4 inches, but he gave me more like 12. Yeah. Again, something never said. That's a sandwich shop.
It's a Subway.
Yeah. It's got pictures of sandwiches on it.
Oh, 12 inch sandwich.
The power of the thrust was really remarkable.
And now we're back to NASA.
It is. Picture of a spaceship launching. He really needs to work on his ball handling.
Said no woman ever. That's awesome.
I tried everything, but he just kept slipping out. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Wowzers.
Wow.
Well, you know, some people just want to leave. I'm sure he's tired. He spent all day on his knees.
Praying.
You know.
He was praying.
It depends. Or he's a plumber. Okay. I mean, most of the time, you're kind of got up under there to work on it, take a peek at it. I don't know.
You usually wear knee pads.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of padding for the knees. I was surprised by the sheer power of the semen.
Gross.
You know, those guys, Deadliest Catch, I mean, they are tough dudes.
Yeah, they are.
It's fine. It's just a scratch. Semen first class. She took his head in her hands and stroked it. That's very sweet. Oh, you know, it's very reassuring. That's what guys want. He tried everything but just couldn't get it in. This is
it's a puzzle.
This is a gif of a hamster trying to get his tubby butt into a tube and can't.
That's all too familiar
That's
to me.
That's funny. They're constantly involved in one intercourse or another. It's difficult to separate them for any length of time.
Nobody says conversations are intercourse anymore.
That's true. That's kind of older English.
Old, yeah.
English.
English.
We should try and slip that in while we're talking.
What, intercourse?
Just say it, but in the proper context.
Actually, it would work for this episode. Yeah, and you'll see why.
Try and use words like that. Old phrases, but proper, and see what you can get away with without people even noticing. Things like saying or intercourse, but use it as an action, an
but
activity.
But if I said it, people would know that I was just trying to be funny. Yeah. So they would probably not laugh.
No.
They'd be like, Melissa, that's inappropriate.
And I try to be helpful. Like, here, say this. Say, did you try blowing? You know.
I think I
that's
have
another
that.
Phrase. That's just
have
common.
You tried blowing
that's
on it?
That's common sense. This is more of a punctuality thing, phrase. I'm coming in 2 minutes. But that's good. That gives someone, you know, a heads up, kind of.
Oh, gosh.
That was it. That's all I got.
So many things to say in response to that, but I got to just let it lie. That was good.
That was good. Sorry, there was silence.
No response.
I was still looking at stuff while she said it. Is that enough innuendos?
I like it. Thank you for that. Thank you for your factoids, darling.
All right.
We did decide we're going to add a little bit of factoids to our episodes over on Patreon. So if you like factoids, you can go find us over there too.
Or you can just know to skip the first 6 1/4 minutes of the...
I know I do get messages like, sometimes I skip through the factoids.
Yeah.
Like, it's really okay.
No, I see that.
It's just setting you up for what you're about to get.
Especially
when I tell you these episodes.
Especially like this one.
A little appetizer.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you got to eat before you eat.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Daniel.
Melissa.
Are you ready for my case?
Sure.
Now that I'm all giggly?
Yes.
It's going to be bad. All right, Daniel, this is the case of the brides in the bathtub.
What? Bow, bow, bow. The brides in the bathtub? More than one?
Yes.
Like plural?
Like plural.
Like plural marriage?
No.
Oh.
We've been watching too much Big Love lately.
Yeah, it's a horrible show.
All right, well, in January of 1915.
Oh, goodness.
A man by the name of Detective Inspector Arthur Neal of Scotland Yard received an inconspicuous letter on his desk. Detective Inspector Neal was an intense but kind-looking man in his 50s, and he was very good at his job. He opened the envelope dated January 5th and saw that it contained a letter, a newspaper clipping, and a coroner's report. The letter was sent by a Mr. Joseph Crossley. He and his wife were the landlords of a boarding house in Blackpool, Lancashire.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Everything in the UK sounds so grand.
It
you know
does.
What I mean? Like, I have a boarding house in Blackpool, Lancashire. And then his title is always so noble.
I'm Detective Inspector at Scotland Yard.
Yeah, like it's a 14 titles all strung together. It sounds very grand.
Well, he was very grand.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to like him.
Oh, good.
Mr. Crossley believed that the death of one of his tenants seemed very similar to a death that had made front page news all over England. The newspaper clipping told of a woman, 38-year-old Margaret Lofty, who was found deceased by her new husband, John Lloyd, on December 17th, 1914. She had drowned in a bathtub on the night of her wedding at a boarding house on Bismarck Street in Highgate. Highgate is a section of London.
Ah, okay.
Margaret's death had become a sensational case. This poor woman who had finally found love was dead on her wedding night.
Oh.
In the coroner's inquest dated December 13th, 1913, were the circumstances surrounding the death of another woman, 25-year-old Alice Burnham. Alice was also found drowned in a bathtub by her husband of only 6 weeks, a Mr. George Smith. As it turned out, Alice's father, Charles Burnham, had also contacted Scotland Yard. He, too, was concerned at how similar the deaths of his daughter, Alice, and Margaret Lofty really were and urged Scotland Yard to investigate.
Yeah, you don't just die in a bathtub very often.
Detective Inspector Neil was intrigued and decided to look into the deaths of these two bright and beautiful women. Neil began his investigation at 14 Bismarck Street in Highgate. He made his way up to the room that had been rented by John and Margaret Lloyd. The tub that Margaret was found in was a freestanding white clawfoot tub 5 feet long, but it tapered down from the top, making it less than 4 feet long at the bottom.
Okay.
So can you picture that tub?
Yeah.
How it goes in on the sides?
Deep, but you kind of curl in it.
Yes. Wouldn't be something I could sit in for very long.
You couldn't submerge yourself unless you tucked your legs way up.
Towards your chest?
Yeah, because then otherwise you would be hanging out of it.
That's the problem with being kind of chubby, is that some part of your body is always out of the water.
It happens.
Whether. Okay. Neil found the tub too small for an adult woman to have drowned in.
Yeah.
So I had read that Margaret was 5'7". So that's my height.
Yeah. So
I'm sure she was a lot thinner.
There's a lot, probably. There's a lot hanging out still.
Yeah. Those knees are up by her face.
Yeah.
Detective Neil speaks with the landlady, Mrs. Blatch. She tells him that on the night of December 17th, John and Margaret Lloyd arrived at her residence. Mrs. Blatch shows the newlyweds to their room. After unpacking, John asks Mrs. Blatch if she could recommend a doctor nearby. Margaret has been suffering from a headache since getting off the train.
That's a likely story. Already with the headaches?
Oh, she already has a headache on their wedding night. Mrs. Blatch refers the couple to a Dr. Stephen Bates, who lives nearby. The Lloyds are given a key to the front door and leave for the doctor immediately. The next evening, Margaret asks Mrs. Blatch if she could take a hot bath, causing the landlady to carry pail after pail of hot water up the stairs to fill the bathtub.
Oh, no.
Why even have a bathtub if you have to go to all that work for somebody else?
I would have the room that didn't have a bathtub, and those would be upstairs. And then if you wanted to rent a room that had a bathtub, those would be downstairs.
Yeah, no, that would be way smart. That would be much smarter.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
There's no way I'm lugging pail after pail of hot water upstairs. And picture the stairs. I'm sure they're small and skinny.
Yeah. And what if two people, well, I don't know how many rooms are upstairs, but what if two people wanted a bath that night? She has to boil all that water.
That's an extra and then, 20 pounds.
Oh my goodness. You'd be in great shape.
Why are you looking at me when you said that?
No, in general, I'm saying that. If one were to carry pail after pail of hot water up the stairs, one would, well, you would fit in the tub fine. Because remember you said, like, you know, we're too chubby to fit in the tub?
Oh, my gosh.
Dead. So bathtub suites downstairs.
Good idea.
All right, I'll stop.
After filling the tub, Mrs. Blatch goes back downstairs and into the kitchen. While she's ironing, she can hear Mrs. Lloyd in the bathtub.
She is one busy beaver, isn't she? Poor Mrs. Blatch.
So she could hear Margaret upstairs kind of splashing around. She assumed that she was washing her hair.
She heard
a loud sigh.
What's the best song for taking a bath?
Rub-a-dub-dub, I was splashing in the tub.
Oh, that's a good choice.
Thank you.
I thought it was the splish splash she was taking a bath.
That was the same one.
It's the same one?
Yeah.
Well, I remember a different line than you do from it.
Splish splash. Splish splash. I was taking a bath.
Isn't that how it starts?
All along the Saturday night. Rub a dub. I was splashing in the tub, thinking everything was all right.
What if that song was based on this tragedy?
It's not.
I'm assuming this is a tragedy, or you wouldn't be telling it to me.
It's not. Okay, so. All of a sudden, she hears the front door slam shut, and Mrs. Blatch walks up. Is it Blatch or Batch?
Oh, goodness.
Oh, it's Blatch. Blatch. Okay. Mrs. Blatch walks over to the door and locks it, and then returns back to her ironing. She is soon interrupted again, this time by a knock at the front door. It's John Lloyd. He apologizes, saying that he had forgotten the key. He had gone out to purchase tomatoes for his new wife. John goes into the sitting room and plays a hymn on the pump organ.
Oh, so much, so much going on. Hold, first of all, when we got hitched, I'm trying to remember. Did you ask me to find you tomatoes?
I think I did. Yes.
God, I just right now would be, if I could get a tomato right now, like a fresh tomato. That has to be good. Like a really fresh tomato.
Off the vine.
Dark. Juicy, but not too soft. Firm.
I don't get the tomato thing.
All right.
Okay, so he's playing a hymn on the pump organ.
He's playing with his pump organ.
Which means, you know, he's a Christian.
Sure.
Because he's playing a hymn.
Right.
Well, less than 20 minutes later, she hears Mr. Lloyd shout from upstairs, "My wife has drowned!"
Well, yeah, if you're eating tomatoes in a bathtub, what do you expect?
Mrs. Blatch. Oh, gosh, I feel like I'm going to be giggling the whole time. Okay, Mrs. Blatch runs to get help. Soon, an officer is on the scene. He sees a deceased Margaret lying naked on the bathroom floor, and a man is frantically pumping her arms up and down. All I'm picturing is this guy, like, pumping, shaking her. Are you okay?
That's not how you revive someone who's drowned.
No, it's not. Mrs. Blatch is then sent to retrieve Dr. Bates. Detective Inspector Neal interviews the doctor. He said that when he arrived, he examined Margaret and pronounced her to be dead. There does not seem to be any injuries, and the bath water is still warm.
So how the hell did she drown?
I know.
In a fairly short bathtub.
Well, I'm still surprised that the water's warm. And if the water's warm. If I try to take a bath, it's ice cold after 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's probably a pretty deep tub. And she carried, I don't know.
It's pretty deep, but it's short and skinny at the bottom.
Okay, so Mrs. Blatch would have to boil a pot of water, right?
I am assuming, it's not because like she had unless she has a hot water tap down in the kitchen. She might have had a hot water tap down in the kitchen. It's just the bathtub was freestanding, so there wasn't any pipes or anything hooked to it.
Okay.
Hooked to it? Would you say hooked?
Connected. Sure. Okay. Interfaced with. Yeah.
Intercoursed.
Sure. All those things. Oh. Anyway, okay. So I guess fine. Whatever. Tomatoes.
A few days later, Dr. Bates confirms the cause of death to be that of drowning. Bates then told Neal that when Lloyd brought Margaret in the evening before on their wedding date, she was complaining of a severe headache. But Lloyd did all of the talking, and Margaret seemed dazed and a little confused. Lloyd being John, the husband. Right. Okay. And that the doctor could not seem to get a clear and precise answer from her.
Okay.
But Margaret did have a fever. So Inspector Neal's thinking, had she been drugged?
Oh.
Dr. Bates prescribed Margaret a sedative and told Lloyd that if she wasn't better by the next day to come back in. Now, Dr. Bates also found it strange that Lloyd had very little emotion about the death of his new bride. They had just gotten married.
Yeah, that's odd.
And when he was told there was to be an inquest into Margaret's death, since her death was not natural, Lloyd responded that he hoped the verdict was not suicide. "I should not like it that my wife was insane," he is quoted as saying.
Ouch.
Lloyd also ordered the cheapest coffin you could find.
That piece of crap.
I know. Jerk. Detective Inspector Neal interviewed Margaret's solicitor, which means to us Yankees lawyer.
Yeah.
Can I say Yankees?
Sure.
Is that bad?
Yeah. You just can't say Yank.
Oh, okay. He discovered that 3 hours before she died, Margaret had a will drawn up, and her sole beneficiary was her husband, John Lloyd.
What? What?
She had also withdrawn all of her savings.
3 hours before. So she's in the tub with the poor lady carrying the pails of hot water up. And she's like, I know what I need. A will and some tomatoes right now.
That's what she wanted on her honeymoon.
So he went out, got tomatoes, and withdrew money.
Or she withdrew money earlier in that day.
Okay.
While getting the will.
Gotcha.
Soon, Margaret Lofty's tragic death is front page news. Woman drowns in bath on honeymoon.
And no one suspects anything.
Nope.
That's not weird.
Nope.
And highly unlikely.
It was a tragic accident. Unable to locate Mr. John Lloyd, Neil turns his attention to the death of Alice Burnham only the year before. Neil learns that Alice met her husband George Smith as she was caring for an elderly gentleman in the resort beach town of South Sea in Portsmouth, which is obviously on the coast.
Because it says port.
Right.
Portsmouth.
It's Portsmouth.
Yeah, but it's spelled Portsmouth, which I think means like the mouth of
the port.
Port.
Yes.
I'm just guessing.
Well, the couple were engaged after a month. After a brief visit with Alice's family, to which they were not impressed with George and even a little fearful. Alice's father was quoted as saying that to him, George seemed evil and that he didn't even want to sleep in the same house as George. He was afraid he was going to do something to them.
Yet, this guy's going to marry his daughter.
Right.
That's nice.
He actually made them leave early, cut their visit short, because he was so freaked out by this guy, George. And yet...
That's weird.
His daughter was all over it.
Because she wants to believe.
Well, the two were married on November 4th, 1913, against the wishes of Alice's family. Detective Inspector Neil interviewed Mrs. Crossley, the landlady of the Blackpool Rooms. She tells him that the couple arrived 6 weeks after they were wed, so they were taking a late honeymoon. Before moving into the boarding house, George Smith wanted to see the bath they would be using. And Mrs. Crossley also told Inspector Neil that she had overheard Alice saying that this was the second boarding house they had checked out that day because the first boarding house didn't have a bathtub.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Mm-hmm. This guy likes his bathtubs.
He does.
For his wives. Is this the same guy?
Well, we're not there yet.
I'm not supposed to ask that. Never mind. Scratch that. Cut.
George had also taken Alice to a doctor within hours of their arrival. Alice had been suffering from persistent headaches.
You know, it must be in the air.
The next day, George had left the boarding house to buy eggs for breakfast. After he had returned, he and Mrs. Crossley were in the kitchen when she noticed water dripping from the ceiling. George ran out of the kitchen and up the stairs, yelling that Alice was in the bath. He then yelled down to her that Alice was dead. A doctor was brought up to Alice's body and said he did not find anything suspicious. So they must have had indoor plumbing.
This was an advanced house.
It was in Blackpool. Right?
Blackpool.
Blackpool was up and coming.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Alice's father, Charles, discovered that George Smith had received a 600-pound life insurance payment and Alice's entire savings. The life insurance policy was taken out the day before the two were married. 600 pounds was almost 760 US dollars then, which is over $23,000 today.
Yeah.
In British pounds sterling, that's a little over 18,000 pounds.
Gotcha.
So that's not very much.
No. But it's better than...
It's better than nothing.
Nothing.
He also learned that Alice had a will drawn up 5 weeks after they were wed, leaving all her possessions to her husband, George. And then 4 days later, Alice was dead, buried in a pauper's grave, and George Smith had disappeared with all the money.
So he didn't want to spend any money on a proper grave.
No.
Wow.
He didn't even tell her family or invite them to a funeral or anything. He just buried her and left.
Took the money and ran.
Yeah.
What a giant piece of crap.
Inspector Neal began to think that John Lloyd and George Smith were possibly the same man.
Of course.
But how could they find him? All they had was a simple description. 5'9", brownish graying hair, brown eyes, a full mustache, and he walks with his knees slightly together.
Oh, he's a knee knocker.
Well, that really could be most any man walking the streets of London.
Right.
Neal was able to find a photograph of George and Alice and a photograph of John Lloyd from Margaret's possessions. The men in the photographs looked remarkably alike. So they were basically the same person. Not basically, they were the same person.
Yeah.
On January 12th, Dr. Bates called Detective Inspector Neal. The Yorkshire Insurance Company were inquiring about Margaret Lloyd's death. 3 days before she married John, Margaret had taken out a life insurance policy for £700, which is about £74,000 today, almost $100,000 in U.S. currency, making John her sole beneficiary.
Wow.
So he received a big chunk of money from Alice's death. Mm-hmm. And now they're realizing he received a big chunk of money from Margaret's death. Neal asked the doctor to issue a favorable report to the insurance company. He knew that John Lloyd would have to get in touch with his lawyer and pick up the money from his office. Neal had the office watched day and night. Finally, on February 15th, a man who matched the description of Lloyd walked into the lawyer's office or solicitor's office.
Okay.
Neal made his way over and introduced himself, asking him if he was John Lloyd. He answered yes. Neal then asked him if he was also George Smith, to which he denied. Neal knew they were one and the same and threatened him. John cowered and admitted to being John Lloyd and George Smith.
That's it? That's all it took?
He was promptly arrested, charged with making a false entry of marriage. Meaning that he used a different name when marrying Margaret.
Right.
But he was not officially charged for the murders of Alice Burnham and Margaret Lofty yet. So yeah, that's all it took was he was like, I'm going to threaten you.
I don't believe you. Okay, fine. Fine.
Don't yell at me.
Yeah.
Don't yell at me anymore.
I can't handle it. Why not just say no?
Well, I think he kind of knew at that moment.
Probably. Yeah. Probably.
George Joseph Smith was born on January 11th, 1872 in Bethnal Green, London, which puts George in his early 40s when he was arrested. He was the son of an insurance agent. When George was only 9 years old, he was sent off to reformatory school in Kent for stealing and was repeatedly returned to prison throughout his childhood for theft and larceny.
At nine years old. Wow, good for him.
Well, and he came from a very reputable family, so nobody could understand why he was doing these things.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, but that's about all the information I could get from his childhood.
Okay.
In 1896, George was imprisoned for 12 months for persuading a woman to steal from her employers. After his release, George married a woman by the name of Carolyn Thornhill. George married Carolyn under the name George Oliver Love.
My name's George Love.
This, ladies and gentlemen, was his one and only legal marriage. All in all, this guy was married no less than 7 times. He was a serial bigamist.
You know what else he was?
What?
Not very good at anything, because every time he did something, he got caught.
He did get caught.
He's horrible at this.
Yeah.
Okay. I apologize if my sound is different, because I just realized that our board barely touched one of our little control knobs, and now I'm way louder.
Okay. Yeah, you sound better.
All right. What the hell was I talking about? Forgot.
That he was really bad at his job of crime.
Yes. Okay. So he's horrible at this job of crime.
Yeah, he wasn't really good at it.
He's really good with women, though.
He is.
At least he's good at the start.
So I read that he was relatively good looking and he was charming. But back in this day, women were a little bit desperate.
I was going to say, I bet they were easily swayed.
Because this is the beginning of World War I. Not really the beginning. It had been going on for a year.
Yeah.
But men, there weren't a lot of available men at the time.
No.
Because they were either fighting in the war or had died. So there was this plethora of women, very little men pool.
And during this time, let's see, how can we phrase this without it sounding weird and horrible? Probably won't be able to, but whatever. We'll say it's traditional, right?
Okay.
Women heavily relied on men.
Right, or their fathers.
Right. So we'll say, okay, today women are a lot more independent than they were in 1901 or whatever. When was this?
1915.
But then also traditional men would then be traditional men. But if they're gone, the traditional woman is really left with not a lot of options.
Right. They continued to basically live in their parents' homes.
Yeah.
And so, just kind of waited to meet someone. But these women actually were working. They were caregivers for elderly people.
Okay.
So they would go and live and take care of them.
They're tough.
Yeah, they are. Yes.
I guess, though, during those circumstances, you really kind of learn to step up pretty quickly. Anyway. All right. So, yeah, he's horrible at his job of being a piece of crap.
So George would marry a woman, then steal her money and take off. This was what he did.
Yeah. And he's kind of George Clooney-ish.
Kind of.
Right? Got the silver going on. Kind of like me.
Oh, Silver Fox.
Yeah. Without the George Clooney.
And he's got the big bushy mustaches. Wore suits every day. A top hat.
That do it for you?
A bow tie.
If I had a bushy mustache, top hat, bow tie?
I would think you were a magician. All right.
And I look at you in a really sensuous voice. I say, I can make you disappear.
I thought you were going to say, you want to pet my rabbit?
No. Yes.
Oh, make myself laugh. All right. But had George really murdered two of them? Had he really murdered two of his wives?
Can you prove it?
And how? Alice and Margaret didn't have any suspicious markings or self-defense wounds. If they had been physically held under the water, the two women would have bruises or have struggled, right?
Probably.
Not too long after George was arrested, Detective Inspector Neal received a letter from the local police chief in Herne Bay, Kent. The police chief had been reading the articles about the brides in the bath and realized that they both struck a striking parallel to a case that had been haunting him for the last 4 years. The death of Beatrice Bessie Mundy.
Poor Beatrice.
Bessie.
Bessie's a good name.
Neal learned that she, too, was on her honeymoon and had been found drowned in the bath. Bessie met and married a man in 1910 by the name of Henry Williams. He was an art restorer from London. Inspector Neal sees a photo of Bessie and Henry and immediately knows that the groom is George Smith. Yeah. On the day of their wedding, George became furious when he realized that the money that Bessie had from her parents was in a trust run by her uncle. She was given £8 a month, which is over £1,200 today, which is about $1,500. So she's getting, you know, a decent amount of money. Yeah. George insisted that Bessie challenge her uncle and ended up receiving £138, the interest on her portion of the inheritance. So instead of getting money every month, she got one sum.
So he's good with words.
I think
because
so.
He's able to convince a woman, young woman, to change up her whole financial situation. And she buys it. She's like, oh, okay. So I wonder what he said to her.
I just kept reading that he was very charming. He had always been very charming.
I wonder if he kind of spun it in a way that she's like, oh, that makes sense. I should probably do that.
And like, they wanted to make their husband happy.
Right, right.
Yeah. George immediately took the money and left.
Of course he did.
Leaving a letter behind claiming that Bessie had given him an STD.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
Yeah. Well, here.
Oh, okay, that is not nice.
Okay. 18 months later, the two met again by chance on the street.
What?
George claimed that he had been looking all over for her. He apologized and told Bessie that he had an STD and didn't want to infect her. So that's why he left, is because he was the one with an STD. George also promised to pay Bessie all the money he had taken. They reconciled and continued the marriage.
Why would she go back with him?
George rented them a house on 80 High Street that did not come with a bath, but that was okay. He just had Bessie rent one.
I need you to rent a bathtub.
Yeah, so she went and rented a bathtub.
You think she was like, oh, okay.
Ooh, what sounds,
are we going to do something fun?
Oh, is this for your STD?
Does it involve tomatoes? What?
By this time, okay.
Hold on.
What?
Is she that desperate?
I think there was an air of desperation around this time for women who were a little bit older and not married. That's when the whole spinster started coming out, and you were past your prime, and could you still bear children?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
By this time, according to George, Bessie had begun having fits, which were explained as epileptic seizures. George took Bessie to a local GP, Dr. Frank French, and he prescribed some headache medication for her seizures.
Sure.
On July 12, 1912, George phoned Dr. French saying that his wife was having another seizure. French checked on her and promised to come back the next day. But the next morning, French received a note from George that asked him to come to his home at once. George believed that his wife was dead.
Yeah, that's not good.
And nobody else had seen Bessie have seizures. This was only coming from George. He was telling everybody that she was having seizures, that she was losing moments in time, and she wasn't remembering. And Bessie's sitting there going, I don't remember losing moments in time. I don't remember having a seizure. And he's saying, oh, no, no, you did. You just don't remember. So he's basically gaslighting her.
Huh.
Dr. French was at the house a few minutes later. He found Bessie still submerged in the bathwater, her legs stretched forward and feet hanging over the edge. So this guy, George, didn't even pull his wife out of the water.
Right. So her torso, essentially, from hip to head, her torso is under the water.
Yes.
And her legs are out.
Yes.
To make room, because most of those bathtubs, you couldn't
lay flat.
Have all of you in it.
No.
Without your head being popped out.
No, but he never pulled his wife out of the bathtub. So he had time. He took the time to write a little letter, have it sent down the road to the doctor.
Oh.
And then wait for the doctor to come to the house.
That's a good point. Good
and
Lord.
Never pulled her out. Would you at least try to pull me out? I don't think you could, but I think
probably
you could
not. It depends. I mean, if you're definitely, there's no bubbles.
You're like, she's gone.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not even going to hurt my back to
I might,
get her
yeah,
out.
I might just have the dog. I might have the 911 personnel do it. I don't know. I might have the... Yeah, why the hell wouldn't he pull her out?
I don't know.
And try CPR. Of course, he didn't know what it was then, but...
He would just move her arms up and down.
Yeah, just shake her toe, throw a tomato at her. I don't know.
Without any signs of a struggle or bruising, Dr. French recorded Bessie's death as an accidental drowning. She must have had another fit and drowned. So her drowning was attributed to her seizures.
Yet there's no
proof.
That
nobody had seen her have.
Right.
George walked away with £2,579, which is worth 272,000 pounds today.
Yeah.
Which is $345,000 in U.S.
currency. All right, now we're talking. Now it's getting better.
Okay, but this is the first one who had passed.
Okay.
So he couldn't just live on that money. He had spent all that money and then had to go to Alice and Margaret.
Yeah, because you need more, I guess.
So he was left with a decent amount of money, but he refused to pay for a private plot. And Bessie was buried in a cheap coffin in a common grave.
Oh, God.
She's buried with a bunch of other people. And he has 272,000 pounds. Well, for today.
I think just because of that, he deserves to be tied up, thrown on an anthill, and covered in honey.
All right. Oh, and he returned the bathtub, receiving a full refund.
Because she drowned in it?
Yeah, so he returned it.
Oh, yeah, you can get your bathtub back. I don't want it. My wife drowned in it, and I want a full refund. Oh, okay.
So three women were dead. All died by drowning in the bathtub only days or weeks after marrying the same man. No struggle, no bruising, no defensive marks.
All buried in cheap coffins in cheap graves.
Yeah, and their husband then leaves town with all the money he was given from their policies or wills. So how did he do it? How did George murder these wives? Investigator Neal knew that the only man who could figure out the riddle was that of Dr. Bernard Spilsbury. Spilsbury. Wow. These Spilsburys smell like snozzberry.
That's...
Well, he was considered the real-life Sherlock Holmes.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, like they based it on him?
His forensic work is very familiar to that of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes.
Gotcha.
I didn't even have to write that down. I knew who wrote Sherlock Holmes.
Wow, look at you and your scholarish stuff.
And I've also been to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's home.
Was he nice? Did he invite you in for tea and crumpets?
He wasn't there.
He wasn't there?
Okay. No, no.
That's weird.
Yeah, we just went in, paid some money, and just walked around.
Wandered around his home.
Okay, so Spilsbury is also considered the father of forensic science.
Nice.
Dr. Spilsbury worked as the home pathologist for the Metropolitan Police Department. Spilsbury immediately had the three bodies of the women exhumed. Each woman's lungs and stomach were filled with traces of soapy water. Their deaths seemed to be instantaneous. Their hearts and brains were normal, and no trace of poison was found. Detective Inspector Neal finds that odd. He believed each woman had been drugged since all three of George's wives were suffering from some kind of headache disorder and were a bit sedated and slow when they were examined by their doctors.
Yeah.
Bessie did have goosebumps on her skin, which can be caused from sudden death and more frequently in sudden death from drowning. Now, this is what Spilsbury told Neal. Finally, Spilsbury had a breakthrough. He remembered that Bessie was found still clutching a bar of soap, and it triggered a memory, a story he had heard once upon a time. In 1841, a ship named the Caledonia sank off the coast of Cornwall. The ship's captain's dead body washed ashore the next day, still holding tightly to a bag in each hand. The shock of going into the water quickly rendered him unconscious, drowning the captain in the process. If Bessie had died from a fit in the bathtub, she would have let go of the soap.
Huh. How would you still be clutching it?
George must have surprised Bessie. She wasn't expecting it, which means it happened very quickly. Spilsbury and Neal decide to run an experiment. So here we go. We've got Sherlock Holmes and kind of Dr. Watson.
Sure.
I'm gonna say Neal was like Dr. Watson, right?
Yeah. We're going to conduct an experiment.
They recruit a few highly trained female divers that were the same height and shape as these three women. And the men are able to find the same bathtub that Margaret died in. So they go and get this bathtub. The men tried different forms and methods of drowning the women, but they all fought back, and there was noise, water spillage, and injury. So this wasn't working. Then Spilsbury decides to recreate the scene from Bessie's death, her legs straight out with feet dangling over the edge. What if George had just pulled the women under by their feet? So he tells Neil his theory. Another diver gets in the tub, and Neil simply walks up to her, grabs her feet, and pulls them towards his chest in one quick motion. The woman is submerged and immediately passes out. The sudden flood of water into her nose and throat must have caused her to go into shock and lose consciousness. It took the men almost 30 minutes to fully revive the woman.
Wait, this poor woman was helping them out with their experiment?
And almost died.
And they almost drowned her?
Yes, because they didn't know what to expect because this was an experiment. So he walked up to her. In one motion, they think he just grabbed her feet and pulled her up.
So then she slides down.
Then she slides down into the water.
Before she can even react.
Right.
What?
Yeah. Isn't that wild? I'm going to read an excerpt from Detective Inspector Neal's memoir about this experiment.
Okay. That's bizarre.
It was decided to test sudden immersion. So from the ankle, I lifted up her legs very suddenly. She slipped under easily, but to me, who was closely watching, she seemed to make no movement. Suddenly, I gripped her arms. It was limp. With a shout, I tugged at her armpit and raised her head above the water. It fell over to one side. She was unconscious. For nearly half an hour, my detectives and I worked away at her with artificial respiration and restoratives. Things began to look serious. Then a quick change began to take place, and her pretty face began to take on the natural bloom of young, healthy womanhood. It had given us all a turn, so practical demonstration in baths were from that moment promptly discontinued. She told us afterwards that immediately she went under the water with her legs held up in the air, the water just rushed into her mouth and up her nostrils. That was all she knew. As she remembered, no more until she came to and saw all our anxious faces bending over her.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wouldn't you just be freaking the heck out?
I couldn't imagine.
Oh, God, what do we do?
Yeah. Oh, God, we've killed her. How do you tell that to her parents?
Say, well, it was...
It was him. I'd blame everybody else.
Yeah.
Spilsbury and Neil now know how George killed Bessie, Alice, and Margaret. George was formally charged with the murders of his wives on March 23, 1915. On June 22, 1915, George Joseph Smith was on trial for the murder of Bessie Mundy. Under the accordance of English law, he could only be tried for one of the murders, but prosecuting counsel were allowed to mention the deaths of Alice and Margaret to establish a pattern of George's crimes. George decides to not show any evidence of his innocence, believing that the prosecution does not have substantial evidence against him. So he had sent a letter to his lawyer saying, I'm not going to fight this. They don't have anything on me. We don't need to prove my innocence because I'm innocent.
Gotcha.
Dr. Spilsbury is allowed to conduct the experiment with a female diver in the bathtub that Alice was murdered in, but only the judge and jury were allowed to see firsthand. It was done in a private room because it was inappropriate for a young woman to be seen in a bathing suit in a court of law.
They didn't do it naked?
No, she wore a bathing suit.
Oh, yeah.
The diver gets in the warm tub and reclines as if taking a nice, relaxing soak. Spilsbury then quickly lifts her legs up, and the top half of her body is quickly submerged, rendering the diver unconscious. She, too, has to be revived.
Wait, they did it again? They did it again.
They were able to do it again, just this one last time.
We're looking for volunteers. For a quick demonstration.
Now, I don't know how they found the woman to do this. I'm assuming it's not the same woman that they did the first time, but I'm wondering if she even knew what was going to happen. Like, okay, so we're going to need you to demonstrate something for us. We're not going to tell you what you're going to do. You're just going to get in a bath in a bathing suit in front of all of these men who are just going to be watching you.
And just so you know, we did this before and the other lady almost died.
I'm sure they didn't tell her that part.
Hop on in.
On July 1st, the jury took only 22 minutes to find George Joseph Smith guilty. He is sentenced to hang in the gallows of Maidstone Prison. On August 13th, 1915, George was led to the noose. A dark hood is placed over George's head, and he screams out, "I am innocent!" The rope is tightened, and within seconds, he is dead, never once admitting his guilt.
They should have put him in the tub.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And I bet he would have freaked out.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because it would have reminded him.
Of what he did.
Yeah. They're like, hey, so yeah. We're going to put you in a tub. You'll be fine.
You'll be okay.
You'll be fine.
We just want you to be clean before we murder you.
I bet he wouldn't get anywhere near a tub.
Probably not.
Which would be very telling.
He probably never bathed again.
No.
If you believe in ghosts, think of these women coming back to him anytime he was in water. That should be a movie.
Well, he's dead because he got his neck stretched.
No, I know, but before they hanged him.
Yeah.
Hang.
Hunged him.
You're not supposed to say hung. It's hung hanged.
Him. Hanged. Hangry.
I'm hangry right now. All right. Fun fact. Daniel, you ready for a fun fact?
No. Yes. Yes. Okay. Of course.
Well, George Smith is also considered a bigamist.
Of course. Yeah.
He never officially divorced his first wife, marrying 8 women in all. He also went by the names George Rose Smith, Charles Oliver James, and Henry Williams.
All good, strong names.
Manly names. So, Daniel, what did you think of my case?
Here's my question.
Okay.
How did he discover that procedure method worked?
That's a great question.
Because...
And he never said. He never said that he never admitted to doing this. So he never gave reasons and he never said why he did it or how he figured out that this would work.
Because he would have had to either accidentally or study something or accidentally come across this and figure out that it would happen. Well, because let's say he wanted to try and drown a woman without there being any stab wounds or, the traditional way of murdering your
wife.
Right,
there's no suspicious bruising or...
So he leans towards, well, let me try and fake a drowning and then people won't know. So he probably tried to drown someone and it didn't succeed, or he did, but it splashed and made a big, mess. So it's almost like he perfected his game and then finally actually went through with it, meaning, married him, got their money, got them to appear to be drowned, and sort of succeeded.
And they'd really believe that he was drugging these women, that he was drugging his wives. So it made them easier to murder, and maybe they didn't fight back. But there's really no proof that they were drugged because Dr. Spilsbury said he could not find any traces of poison.
It sounds like he didn't even have to have them drugged. He just had to convince them to take a bath.
True.
Which I suppose if you are, especially during that time, it's not like everyone had showers. So, it's a kind of honeymoon thing. So he's like, hey, let me get the bath. You can take a nice bath. She's like, ooh, okay.
Well, the first official murder is Bessie, and she was wife number 5. So the wives before Bessie all said that they really weren't married to him for very long, and he just stole their money.
Huh.
So he didn't try to murder them. You're right. Bessie was the first one he murdered, and then there was a wife in between Bessie and Alice. Wow. And he didn't do anything to her. Isn't this interesting?
Yeah, so he sort of kind of progressed and tried to perfect his game and then figured out he could do that.
Yeah.
Even to this day, you didn't know that.
No, I didn't.
Nobody knew until they now listen to you tell us this.
Well, they also think...
I'm never taking a bath again.
They also think that the women might have had their knees up and that he was able to get his hand under their knees and then pull up from there.
Which wouldn't be unusual, right? To have your new husband approaching you while you're in the bath.
Right. And then go to touch your legs. Yeah,
hands across your legs.
His hand. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And then
is everybody else picturing this? I'm picturing this.
None of you are taking a bath again.
No.
I can already hear it. I hear you right now. Like, honey, so we're going to remodel the bathroom into just a shower.
Well, that was my idea.
I know.
We don't need a bathtub in our master bath. We don't have little kids that take baths anymore. So I'm like, let's get rid of it and make a huge shower.
Okay, here's the conundrum. We can talk construction now. You ready?
What?
What is right above the bathtub?
A window.
A window. You can't have a window in a shower. It's weird.
Okay, if you have a window in your shower, let us know. Because I think you can have a window in a shower.
You can, but then...
All right, let's not...
I don't know.
Let's not have our dysfunction.
It's like having a window there. In a closet. No, it's not at all like it, but it's similar.
All right, well, my sources for this case were, of course, a bunch of articles. I also found it on a show called Murder Maps. And there's a great Wikipedia page on this.
And we all know Wikipedia is accurate.
Well, I mean, it's 1915, but it was really good. I actually got a lot of information from this Wikipedia page. I did initially hear this case on a podcast called Scotland Yard Confidential. And the host sounds like Johnny Depp when he's playing Captain Jack Sparrow. So it's super sexy. It's a great podcast, but the guy's voice, I'm like, hurr.
If I made you a little more unhappy, you would leave me for him. That's what I hear. I hear it in your voice.
I would just listen to this guy a little bit more.
While sitting in a bathtub.
Right. While sitting in a bathtub.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So go check out that podcast. It's actually really good. And Murder Maps is a very interesting show.
I like the name Scotland Yard Confidential. That's like, it sounds serious.
I like it. It's interesting to me.
Hello.
My dad would like it.
I'm Johnny Depp. No, that's not how it starts.
No. All right, Daniel, you want to do Patreon shout outs?
Sure.
Here's your little list. I'm such a good wife. Don't kill me in the bathtub.
All right. Thank you so much for supporting our humble podcast. It really helps out a lot. And we'd really like to thank Karina. Thank you so much, Karina. April L. Thanks, April. Sarah H. Thank you so much, Sarah. Nancy B. Thank you, Nancy. Susan. Thank you, Susan.
Say Susan like you normally say Susan.
Susan. What the hell is that from?
Monsters versus Aliens. The movie our kid used to watch.
Yeah, the animated. Okay. Yeah. Because he goes, ooh. Anyway, she's pissed now. She's withdrawing her
Sorry,
Patreon.
Sorry, Susan.
Thank you, Susan.
Gilla.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Gilla M. Thank you, Gilla.
I actually had her send me a message of how to pronounce her name.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's Scottish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it is Gilla.
It's Gilla. Isn't that pretty?
You're Scottish.
She is. She has Scottish heritage.
We are in mostly name only at this point. Someday we'll visit.
I've been there twice. I don't know what you're talking about.
Fine. Screw you. Just because I am probably indirectly related to you.
Yes. Did we say this story before, you guys?
No, I think maybe.
It is believed that we are probably from the same gene pool. That's what's wrong with our kids.
Okay, this isn't like a KKK thing. So when we say clan, it doesn't mean that, right? Oh,
no. God, no. So I'm from the Campbell clan.
Yes.
And Daniel is from the MacArthur clan, obviously.
Which is a offshoot, a branch, a twig. It's a twig off of the Campbell tree, family tree.
Oh, my gosh. That's what's wrong. And we went to a Scottish fair thing, and they were asking us our heritage, and the lady looks at us and goes, you probably are related.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like not like brother and sister.
No,
it's
like first cousin.
Yeah, we're like, no, not even close.
No, not even close. Anyway. Okay, well, there's a little insight into our crazy life.
Gilla, if you can... tell us something factual or not, just to mess with us. We would love to hear it regarding Scottish heritage. I don't know.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening.
If you
want more of us, you can always go check us out on our Patreon. We're on Instagram. That's all we're on, at Till Death Do Us Part Podcast. If you have any case suggestions, please send them to me at tilldeathdoaspart@att.net. And if you are enjoying the show, we would love a really nice 5-star review over on Apple or Spotify.
Yep.
It makes us feel good. So.
And it's 2023 and we're all about feelings. No, not at all. But still, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Well, be careful.
Oh, goodness. Because marriage is a life sentence.
And divorce is always the better option.
Yeah. And don't ever take a bath again. You are out of your mind if you do.
All right. Bye, guys.
Goodbye.